Now, you're bringing up menus, Tommy. Now, I guess for each of you, what's the process that goes into creating a menu, and what do you want to communicate with it each time you change things up?
Well, I'll start. I change my menu every season because of I like to use the seasonal products.
Sure.
And there's certain products that are, you know, in the winter that you want to eat more, too. So I also change my menu based on what you're feeling like you want to eat. So in the winter, I do more hearty foods. Like okay. I have my ossobuco with risotto underneath because that's like a hearty winter food. And then I don't have it on my summer menu because who wants to be that heavy? You know, I have grilled stuff on my menu in the summertime because people want to stay lighter. They're hot.
Right.
They want to have something that they feel good eating, you know, like grilled. We have a grilled vegetables on the menu. And so that's what goes into mine. And then if a farmer brings me something, you know, and says, hey, we're going to have an abundance of this all of this season. Mm-hmm. Let's figure out how we can fit it into your menu. And I'm like, yes, please. Even like Chris at Mud Lake, we talk dandelion greens because I make a ravioli with it. And so it's like, and people, it's so funny that people like, crinkle their nose when our servers tell them, they're like, dandelion? Because that's all they hear.
Right.
They hear dandelion, but they don't hear the rest of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, you know, our servers have been getting good at just saying, you know what, it's amazing. Try it. And it works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have the same thing going with, you know, with our menu. We recently put it, and we stole this from a chef up north, but we put a $5 tasting of blood and guts. We kind of refer to it as informally in the kitchen of offal, of varietal meats like liver, and we have spleen on our menu right now.
Okay.
And, kidneys and God knows what.
Just how's that going over?
You know, if we sold a $9 or $10 appetizer,
mm-hmm.
it would sit there and we'd throw it away every week, but it's $5. It's a small taste. It's not something you have to commit a generous portion of your meal to or a lot of your wallet to,
mm-hmm.
And people are going for it.
Someone said they had a chicken nugget there, but was really...
It was a sweetbread.
Sweetbread, yes.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
They said it was amazing.
It was a fun dish. We had a good time with that.
Well, and that's what you have to spoon feed some people sometimes. And actually, Joseph Huber and I sat down because one of my awesome clients, her daughter's getting married, and they're actually doing it this weekend, and Huber put on this awesome, the menu is like, I can't wait. I cannot wait to have this menu. And I already did the tasting. I can't wait to eat again. And he's doing these escargot raviolis, and he's doing it with a Maytag finish, and they're phenomenal. And Carol, my friend's like, we have to have these. These are amazing. We cannot put escargot in the print because nobody in my family will try this. And it's like, I always tell people, because I get it all the time, because the cool thing about what I do is 90% of my clients don't get a menu. I show up, and you're gonna eat until you can't eat no more. And my thing is that's my opportunity to show people quail or sweetbreads or something that is totally out of there. I'm going to have tenderloin there always, no worries, but the thing is, it's like, taste it. If you don't like it, spit it out.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather you try something and tell me that's the worst thing you've ever put on your tongue in your life than to tell me, no, I'm not going to try that, because that tells me you're an ignorant idiot, and I don't have time for that.
Well, I think it's a good idea to get people out of their food comfort zones. And, here in West Michigan, having grown up here, as I know you did too, Tommy, I mean, it used to be pretty much a steak and potatoes and pizza kind of place. And
it's
changed quite radically over the last 20 years.
Well,
even
really?
More so in the last 10 years. And it's great to see that.
It's amazing to see that.
We have to remember, like, Sanchez and Sierra Room and Opus, mm-hmm. and these people that really, and Bella Vita and Perky and Wine. And these guys that really, you know, George Sanchez was the first person I think that ever served, you know, octopus in Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I travel a lot. Jenna, I know you travel a lot. Matt, I'm not sure, but that's when you learn to be like, wow, I need to try things. And I feel bad for people that just are like, nope, that's
right.
It. You know, I need a New York strip cook this way, and that's all I'm going to eat.
I think the thing you need to remember, and you know, especially the reason a lot of us travel is because we want to discover something new about the world, and food is one of the great ways to do
that.
Especially if you're I can't really name a country off the top of my head where food is not a very important part of the culture. But certainly if you're in Italy, if you're in France, if you're even in, you know, if you're in Austria, if you're in Germany, these places are, you're going to learn a lot about the culture and about the character of the place that you're in through the food. And
absolutely.
I think in the United States in general, and unfortunately maybe a little bit more in the Midwest, we've lost some of that because we have, you know, and steak and potatoes have a obviously a very, very, very rightful place on our plates here in the Midwest. Chicago was, you know, hog butcher to the world. Beef has been a very important part of our culinary culture. Unfortunately, it kind of took over a little bit too rapidly, and we've sort of forgotten, you know, we've forgotten that Michigan was settled by the French in large degree, and how much of that influence is still around in the state.
Right.
You know, do we try and rediscover that? How much smoked fish are we eating when we're surrounded by these great lakes? No pun intended, I guess. It was an accidental one. I think we've sort of allowed our predisposition towards certain foods to limit our worldview,
right?
And it's even especially when we're standing in our the place that makes our us most comfortable in our home. And I think the more willing you are to explore new things, the better off you're going to
right.
be.
Right. Well, I've often thought if somebody's closed-minded about what they eat, they're closed-minded about many other things in life.
I think
sure,
that's
absolutely.
Most likely true.
Yeah.
I think that's what Tommy was.
Yeah.
Oh, no. And then what the thing is it's funny is if there's ever kids at my function. You know, I'm Uncle Buck to begin with. Love kids because I don't have any. And people are always like, well, we'll just have... I'm like, don't you dare. You are not bringing macaroni and cheese to this gig.
Mm-mm.
You're not... No, these kids are going to have what we're having.
Mm-hmm.
And don't worry, Chef Tommy will turn them around. They're like, oh, my gosh, how'd you do that? You know, my kids will only eat chicken nuggets and macaroni and cheese with me. I'm like, that's because...
That's all you make.
That's all you make.
Right.
You know, and we always do this thing if we do like a really cool wedding or whatever, we have a make your own pizza and show these kids how to make their own pasta and whatnot. Because kids love pasta and pizza.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Instead of just some mozzarella, oh hey, you know, there's some capicola, there's some Genoa, no, we don't have pepperoni. But these are just like pepperoni. Oh my gosh. And it's our duty to as chefs to lead people, not tell them what to eat, because that I have a hard time with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you like your steak well done,
right?
I don't care how you like your done, as long as you're paying for it. I don't care. I will burn it. I don't care. But at the same token, if you're just gonna have that burnt steak and you're not gonna try the quail or the lamb chops, I love it because people are like, no, I don't like lamb. I'm like, try these. No, try them or I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, that's the best thing I ever had in my life. Yeah, because it's. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's the same way with rabbit on my menu.
Oh.
I get people all squirmish about it.
Well, I had the rabbit when I was there a couple weeks ago. Fantastic.
And I'm like, just try it. You are going to love it. It's amazing. And everybody that tries it loves it.
Well, except for poor Anisha that
night. Oh, Anisha.
She has
a rabbit.
So my ex-girlfriend and still very good friend Anisha, she's got Nibbles, her rabbit.
Oh.
So I'm like, I'm digging it. And she's liking it. She liked it until I said, what's the name of your, because I wanted to eat the rest of hers,
right.
So I'm like, so you know, how's Nibbles tonight? And she just kind of put down her fork. I'm like, ah, fish, I can get this with the polenta.
It's
delicious. That was kind of wrong of me, but you know,
but I didn't know if it was gonna sell, so I kind of like posted a note on Facebook one day. I said, hey, if I put rabbit on my menu, will you guys eat it?
Sure.
And I got so many yeses that I thought, you know what? I'm going to try it. And it sells like crazy. Like Pierre at SNS, you know, I call him every week. I'm like, I need more than I had last week. I need more than I had last week. So
that's great.
So that's telling us, and you know, where you're at.
Where I'm at in Comstock Park. It's
exactly.
You know, but so then they say, you know what? They're hunters out there. I'm like, you know what? You're right. So they appreciate it.
You know, and your prices also, you can go there and I always tell people that you're $100 ahead, and then you like hit them with a $35 tasting, which kills me because you're just as good as, if not better, with your tasting menus than I am, and I'm like sticking it to them. But not really. But that's the thing is you're able to, because of your local stuff, you're keeping your prices down and you're putting that value on the plate.
I want people to be able to afford to try new things.
Yeah, right. That's absolutely the case. You don't want to scare people off of the price point, and you don't. The last thing you need is to put more barriers in front of people who are already timid about trying new things.
Right.
Well, especially with your charcuterie, which is top-notch, Matt. Love it. And you're talking to a guy that makes probably about 50 pounds of roulettes a season with duck. How do you get people talked into? I mean,
strangely enough, the charcuterie was a no-brainer for our customers. We're still trying to build a little broader clientele, but because I think people have thought of us as a wine bar from the beginning, you know, cheese, charcuterie, wine, those are natural matches. Mm-hmm. So we sell charcuterie pretty easily, and we sell it fairly broadly, and we do have a few more unusual things on that list from time to time that. We move it all. We sell, you know, raw guanciale, which is not something people are used
guanciale.
To eating.
Guanciale, right.
And lardo. We make our own lardo in-house.
Amazing.
We make some of our own salumi, and head cheese even is something that we can, you know, we don't make it often, and it doesn't fly off the shelf, but it moves. And for some reason, we do have their trust when it comes to charcuterie. It's been something that people have embraced.
Now,
it's actually
before you guys opened the doors at Reserve, I don't think a lot of folks around West Michigan were familiar with charcuterie.
That could be. I'm not 100%
sure.
Oh,
I'm sure they weren't.
So,
sure.
At least the term.
For those who may not be familiar, what exactly is charcuterie?
It translates fairly loosely as, well, not even really loosely. It translates as just the guy who cooks meat.
Okay.
So in Paris in the 19th century, labor in the city of Paris was split into guilds.
Okay.
So there was the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, the charcuterer. The butcher was the gentleman who dispatched an animal and then sold fresh cuts that you took home and cooked. And the charcuterer was the gentleman who made pâtés and sausages and rillettes and terrine and saucisson sec and some of the dry cured things that were ready to be eaten and just eaten room temperature or cold.
Okay.
And it was illegal for their activities to cross over. So the butcher couldn't make sausage. The sausage maker couldn't sell fresh meat.
Oh.
So it sort of got formalized as a profession there.
Okay.
And at the time, most everything was wrapped in a pastry crust.
Okay.
And pâté in French just means bread. It means paste.
Okay.
So most everything you eat, most of the stuff that charcuterie is made from, not most, but a great deal of it in France anyways, was wrapped in a pastry.
Okay.
Because you can keep your dirty hands away from
gotcha.
With it.
Hmm.